Hi, I'm Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy. Thank you so much for joining me today on this episode of Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. Today, we're going to spend some time looking at Dr. Lindsay Gibson's 10 Bill of Rights. Have you ever considered about what you emotionally have a right for in any given relationship? Well, listen in to this TikTok Live as we do a deep dive into this subject.
One of the toughest things to do is to hold on to our boundaries. A lot of us have been raised in homes where it's just polite and nice. We think that we're being kind. And we think that by being generous and compromising that we're actually going to, I don't know why it's suddenly giving me this weird message, but anyway, I'm going to keep moving on. Why we think that by being kind and generous is somehow that we're modeling great behavior and that we're going to get really good behavior back. So I thought it would be really cool today to talk about Lindsay Gibson. She's a psychologist who wrote the book Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, Bill of Rights. But it's really actually something that's applicable to anybody. It's not just applicable to dysfunctional families, although it certainly is very useful. But it's something that it should be happening in all our relationships. So I thought today I wanted to go through that with you guys and talk about it and then be able to sort of see what your reaction is to, oh, isn't that interesting? I can move my picture around. Well, that's kind of good to know because then when I want to read them, you guys can read along with me. But it was trying to show me that I can, there's a feature on TikTok that I don't have. So I deleted it and added it back. And then what happened is that it just sort of acts like I'm a newbie and I don't know what I'm doing on it. So I'm getting all this sudden aid on how to use TikTok. But let me introduce myself. Oh, and I see someone just came in with the same first name as myself. That's really cool. Hi, Carrie. I'm Carrie McAvoy, Dr. Carrie McAvoy. I'm a clinician. I'm a therapist with over 20 years of private practice counseling experience. And here we're going to be talking about all things related to narcissistic abuse, narcissism, mental health issues, relationship issues. But in particularly, I wanted to focus on this, on a Bill of Rights. It's called Bill of Rights. It's something that Lindsay Gibson wrote in the second book. She has two books out on emotionally immature parents. But like I was saying, it's really something that can be applied to any of our relationships. And I would really love to know your reaction. Like, are you surprised? Do you disagree? Is it something you're able to do or not do? So I really would love to hear kind of your reaction. So let's just jump in. The very first one is, you and I have the rights to set limits. She goes on to say, I have the right to set limits on hurtful and exploitive behavior. I have the right to break off any interaction in which I feel pressured or coerced. I have the right to stop anything long before I feel exhausted. I have the right to call a halt to an interaction I don't find enjoyable. I have a right to say no without a good reason. So what do you think? So when you hear the right to set limits, does that feel plausible? Is it happening in your life? Was there an aspect of it that really surprised you? I'd really love to hear your guys' thoughts about it. The one that surprised me, and I grew up in a pretty dysfunctional home, was I didn't know I had the right to call a halt before I felt exhausted. I would push and push. We grew up on a dairy farm and the work came first, frankly. You know, we needed to all give a push regardless. Often we went out without eating. We had breakfast afterwards. The mentality on the farm was the animals ate first. So, you know, we'd come in shaky, exhausted, tired, and then we'd finally have breakfast. So I didn't learn that one. That's a real hard one for me. I feel like I'm not doing my fair share if I'm not pushing myself to the end. So was there one of them on the rights to set limits that really surprised you? Or maybe you're not being allowed to do it in your relationship. Another one is I'm an introvert. So the right to halt an interaction that I don't find enjoyable. Ooh, that's tough. You know, I end up finding because of I'm introvert that, and a lot of people seem to be either ambiverts or extroverts, that there's a lot of negativity that introverts get, like we're seen as shy, which is not true, or that we're not fun. It's just that we have fun in a different way. So I found that was kind of interesting. It made me feel like I could breathe, you know, fill up space and breathe and be uniquely myself. How about to set limits on hurtful and exploitive behavior? Is that hard for you to do? Do you find it really hard to stand up for yourself? Because one of the things that happens in a not narcissistic abusive relationship is that they're very good at gaslighting. And part of the gaslighting is to make you feel bad, ashamed, or crazy for not going along with it. So I'd be kind of curious to see if it, how well can you hold your ground? One of the things I struggled with is I would actually go mute. I find it hard to speak up. It was very, very difficult. So how well is that working for you? Because often they're very good at making us pay for that. You guys are really quiet today. You must be just really listening. So let's go on to the second right. The second right is I have a right not to be emotionally coerced. And she goes on to define it this way. I have a right not to be your rescuer. I have the right to ask you to get help from someone else. I have the right not to fix your problems. I have the right to let you manage your own self-esteem without my input. Ooh, that's a good one. I have a right to let you handle your own distress. I have a right to refuse to feel guilty. Oh yeah, please feel free to jump in, Ms. Mew, if you have a comment on it. I appreciate Trump is our God that you are still concerned about masks. But on the other hand, this is not a forum for that. So at this point, I'd prefer that we didn't have those kind of conversations. So if that continues, we'll have to mute you because this is really a conversation about mental health and we want to keep it safe. So what we're talking about is emotional rights. We all have a right to have our emotional life, to have our full ourself. And so we're talking about these rights in the context of other relationships. So how well are we holding on to these? Do we even know that we have permission to do these? That these are the things that form a normal relationship is what we're talking about today. So how about it? Is it hard for you to hold on to your sense of the right you have not to be emotionally coerced? You know, I actually heard Lindsay Gibson read it herself. And when I heard her say, I have the right to ask you to get help from someone else, I kind of choked on that one. I thought, it feels kind of mean. Does it feel mean to you? I try to imagine myself running into a friend who's having difficulty and for me to say, you know, I'm not in the space to listen to this today. I think you might do better if you talk to a therapist or someone else. I'm like, oh, this feels really awful. I'm not for sure how that would be a really hard one for me to do. But on the other hand, I like to hear that I have the right to do that, that it is not wrong, bad, or mean of me to do it. But but it's hard. I agree. I find it hard too, Teddy. I have that right not to be a therapist, even though I am a therapist and I am also a therapist. And yeah, it is hard to do that, to know that you don't have to step in when you're not working and do that. But you're right, Sexy Brown Queen. It is just setting proper limits with people. But a lot of us have been kind of taught or socialized to feel like these limits aren't necessarily nice or hospitable. So Cyan Woman, hearing that from someone, I would feel like they're really compassionate and self-aware. That's cool. I appreciate hearing that because that, to me, that gives more permission. You know, when you've lived in a group or a system that has really said, you must be there. You must show up the way that I want you to show up all the time. And if you don't, you're bad. Then it's realizing that the system is dysfunctional, not you are dysfunctional is hard. It's a hard shift when it's all that you've known. So Shorty, you said that I have a right to tell you to back off. Exactly. But I have a feeling you're probably good at that. That's something you've practiced. Hey, Rebecca, so good to see you. So, and Cyan Woman, you're also validating the speaker's issues are real. Yeah, exactly. It is important to do that. And this is not about invalidation. This is just about us taking our care of ourselves at the same time. Exactly. So Jellybean, my child does this and I'm 23-year-old, very manipulative from a teenage on about setting limits. So do you find, Jellybean, that it's hard for you to say, you know what? Here's one. My oldest child with homework would come home and he would say, I have to do such and such and I need help. I have to write a paper and I don't know what to write a paper about. So I'd sit down because that's what parents are supposed to do. Although when I was his age, I didn't get that kind of help. It wasn't expected of parents. So I would sit down and say, okay, so what's the topic need to be about? And then we'd start to brainstorm topics. And I would say, and then I'd throw out an idea. He goes, nah. And I'd throw out another idea. He goes, nah, I don't like that. And finally, after so long, I'd realize that this was a debate, that I was being set up to do a debate with him, and that it really wasn't a truly request for help. It was really actually a request just to be antagonistic. So then at that point, I'd say, you know what? I think you got this. You can figure this out. So I was able to do it there, but I found it hard in other places. So here's the next one. The next one is, this is number three. I have the right to emotional autonomy and mental freedom. She goes on to define it as, I have the right to any and all of my feelings. I have the right to think anything I want. I have the right not to be ridiculed or mocked about my values, ideas, or interests. I have the right to be bothered by how I'm treated. And I have the right not to like your behavior or attitude. Now, how many of you find that one a hard one or an easy one? I'd love to hear what you think. Is that an easy one or a hard one? The right to emotional autonomy and mental freedom. That one's an easy one for me. Oh, it's very hard. Can you say more why it's hard? I would love to know what. Really, Kristen, it's hard for you too. That's interesting. Yeah. It's hard for me. The only one that was hard was in my family growing up, it was not allowed to have private thoughts. So if you were thinking negative thoughts, it was kind of a betrayal of the family. But the rest of them, I felt like, I was pretty supportive of my family. So say more how that shows up for you, how it's harder to feel like you have the right to your own emotion and mental freedom. Oh, so gaslighting, Teddy. So you were told that if you had that, then you're being sensitive and anxious. Interesting. Huh. Yeah. I could see how sometimes there's groupthink going on. Have you ever heard of enmeshment? Families tend to be on a continuum between where everybody's got to be kind of on the same page, all the way to families who are so disengaged and unconnected that they hardly even know where anybody is. So in an enmeshed family, which is more common, was what's called undifferentiated ego mass. Don't you love that word? It's a really great word. Undifferentiated ego mass. What that means is they want group thinking. So anybody who didn't agree would then be ostracized or scapegoated for that thought. So for example, say that they say, let's pretend one, a silly one. We're a family that play board games. And if you say, I don't really like board games, they're like, well, what's wrong with you? See, that would be an example of that, where there's pressure to conform. So yeah, Shorty, too much extra. Exactly. That's interesting. You're right. That is a kind of infringement on that autonomy of emotional and mental freedom. That's very true. Yeah. Good point. So let's jump to the next one. I have the right, and this is number four, I have the right to choose relationships. And she goes on to define it as, I have the right to know whether I love you or not. I have the right to refuse what you want to give to me. I have the right not to be disloyal to myself just to make things easier on you. I have the right to end our relationship even if we're related. I have the right not to be depended on. I have the right to stay away from anyone who is unpleasant or draining. Ooh, I'm jumping up and seeing what you guys wrote while I was saying that. I didn't have the right to feel, I didn't feel like I had rights. Oh, that's a good point, Rebecca. And then Six Taco Six Shell said, what about the pressure to conform to certain religious views? Exactly. That would certainly be a challenge to the right to mental freedom. That's a lack of mental freedom if you didn't have a right to even have a religious freedom for you to decide. You know what? I have to admit that there wasn't a religious freedom in my family either. So I agree. Yeah, the right to choose a relationship, that is, in fact, I'm experiencing it right now. You know, I have somebody that I met just recently and I'm realizing there's not a big click, but I feel there's a lot of like pursuing of me and I'm realizing that I don't really want to pursue back and I'm having to do a lot of work with myself to say, you don't have to. It has to be reciprocal. And just because it's not on your side doesn't mean it's bad that if it's not on your side, you know? So that's interesting, Ice Cream. So you find that as you're listening to this, you've really changed a lot. That's really cool. Yeah, Shorty. So you're tolerant, but you have a right to walk away from that. You're right. You do have a walk away. And I didn't want to overlook, Teddy Bear, that you just said you started a divorce process in December. That is another right too. You have a right to end a relationship when you want to, when you need to, when it's in your best interest. Exactly. Good point. So the next one is, I have the right, and I know it's underneath my head, so it's kind of hard. Yeah, I can't really move it. There you go. I have the right to clear communication. This is how Lindsay defines it. Dr. Gibson defines it. I have the right to say anything as long as I do so in a nonviolent, non-harmful way. I have the right to ask to be listened to. I have the right to tell you my feelings are hurt. I have the right to speak up and tell you what I really prefer. I have the right to be told what you want from me without assuming I should know. Ooh, how many of you guys, that last one. How many of you guys grew up in a home that expected mind reading? That's a very common one, and very common with narcissists as well, is that they want us to do mind reading. Exactly. Yeah. So you're hesitant to speak. Yeah. I think a lot of us, that have been in toxic relationships are going to find this one really hard because, in fact, I just was making a TikTok for this upcoming week, and one of them was that what often narcissist or toxic people do is they create a language in order to set the foundation of the relationship, sort of set up what's permissible and not. So what mine did was he called conflict creating a storm in a teacup, which obviously is an exaggeration and a put down. So that's to say any issue I had was a storm in a teacup. So he's already setting up the understanding that I wasn't going to be allowed to have issues. Exactly. He's kind of defining it by that way. Exactly. Yeah. So Ms. Mew, your father taught you to validate feelings based off experience in the past. Interesting. And Sexy Brown Queens, I grew up that way, but I no longer assume the role of mind reader. Exactly. I'm glad to hear that. The wizard, I'm sorry, I touched this and it changes the picture here. I don't mean to keep confusing you guys. This came out of Lindsay Gibson's work she's done a lot of research into adult children of emotionally immature parents, but it really is applicable to any toxic relationship. And you're right. It does remind you a lot of the alcoholic, adult children of alcoholics. She even said that. This came out of a lecture she was giving, and it's in the back of her second book. In the lecture, she said, you're going to feel that these are a lot like adult children of alcoholic rights. And so it's great you made that connection. I love that. And I don't always do, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Dr. Carrie Kerr-McAvoy. I'm a clinician, mental health clinician with over 20 years of experience in private practice. I don't do counseling these days. I don't do therapy these days. I mostly create content and write and talk about these issues and do a lot of education about narcissistic abuse. But on Friday, we were talking about this Bill of Rights, and I said, hey, I'll bring him in. I'll bring him in on my next live. And I go live 3 times a week, so I'll be live again on Thursday and on Saturday. Normally, we just come and talk about anything. And as soon as we get done with these, I'll do that. I'll let you guys just talk with me about whatever is your issue that you're kind of having concerns with, or you want an opinion of a, you know, doctor level in clinical psychology. So I'm being careful because, I'm actually a psychologist, but so let's go to the next right. The right to choose what's best for myself. And this is number six. And I know that you probably, oh, thank you, Wendy, darling. I love that name. That's a cool name. I have the right to choose what's best for me. I have the right to not do things if it's not a good time for me. I have the right to leave whenever I want. I love that one, by the way, as an introvert. I have the right to say no to activities and get-togethers I don't find enjoyable. I have the right to make my own decision without self-doubt. So you have this book on your Audible list? That's cool. Is that an easy one for you guys? I know that's a hard one. Boy, this is one where my family and my late husband's family came down hard on us. If there was a party or a family get together, you were expected to show up. And you were expected to stay as long as they thought you needed to stay until they all agreed it was time to leave. Ooh, it was painful. And there was consequences too. I mean, there was confrontations when we didn't do it. So it wasn't like it was just a threat. It was real. I mean, it was a real expectation. So how about you guys? Is that something you guys had to, really struggle with. Yeah, right to leave whenever you want. Is that, Sarah, that I don't see that as the same as being devalued or discarded. I see that as we're talking about not, that's more related to someone who's setting up and not really engaged in the relationship from the get-go, who's not authentically present. So I view that differently, but that's a good point that you're making. I like, that's interesting. You know, it's out of, let me show you the first book. The first book, and I don't know the name of Lindsay Gibson's second book, but the first book she wrote is this one, Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents. And it's in the back of her second book. You know what? I can tell you what book it is. It lists up here in the back front. It's called Recovering from Emotionally Immature Parents. This is what this is out of in the back of that one. So Mona, Texas, your son-in-law is a narcissist and he's refused to let you see your grandkids. Exactly. You have a right to do that, but you're right. On the other hand, because they're minors, he does control access to them. That's true. And Wendy, darling, your brother's been punishing you for years because, I'm so sorry because of a bad scene. We are the same with the Mexicans with tons of parties. Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed that because my second marriage was to a Mexican man and I lived in Mexico and was part of his family in Mexico. So you're right. There are a lot of expectations that go with that. And something he complained about was he wasn't even allowed to leave home until he married. And he felt like, you know, when I'm adult, I'm in my 20s, I want to leave home. And that's true not for just women, but it's true for both men and women. There's a lot of rules around togetherness. So exactly, I see that. So is it your fault, Wendy, darling, fisherman woman, that you can't see your grandchildren? I'm trying to connect. Oh, you're talking about your brother punishing you because of a band scene. No, that's not your fault. That's something he's not letting go. That, you know, he's not like moving on. That's how I would see it. Yeah, you're right. Ice cream with a plastic fork. You guys' names are fantastic. you're right. We shouldn't be expected to clean, cook, and organize. In fact, right now I'm not dating anybody. And if I were, I would be saying to whoever I meet, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be a wife. I don't plan to take that on for someone. I have a right to say, no, I'm not interested to doing that anymore or doing it at all, you know? Hey, it's so good to see you, Keith. So yeah, it changed it again. Okay. I'm just going to leave it this way because this is just too chaotic. So let's go on to the next right. The next right is, I have the right to live my own way. I have the right to take action, even if you don't think it's a good idea. I have the right to spend my energy and time on what I find important. I have the right to trust my inner experience and take my aspirations seriously. I have the right to take all the time I need and not be rushed. So what do you think? How well is that one going in your life? How well do you have the right to live life on your own way? This is the one I limit myself on this one. I know that I'm now in a life setting with people. The people in my life are okay with me doing whatever I want, but I still live like, in fact, I'm feeling embarrassed saying it. I still live like that's not true. It's interesting how we can hold ourselves to rules that are not even currently in place because of what we learn. It's like we've incorporated these people into our heads and then they continue to impact us when we're not even around them. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going backwards right now. You have a right not to be criticized. Do I have to make one? Yeah, you're right. So I'm still in love with my narcissist and I know he won't change and I don't know what to do. I'm sorry to hear that. When we get done with these rites, I will kind of like talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. So if you're still here, I'd be happy to talk about that. How to let go of that, how to move on. MK Coletta, because you're right. That's a very tough situation. And often that happens that they discard us and we sometimes don't even see it coming and it's very devastating. Exactly. So, and yeah, Wendy, darling, I hear that you feel devastated by this cutoff that you have with your brother over this issue. I can hear that that's still very, very painful. It does make it. Yeah, the background, by the way, Keith, is because of this connection, or this Bill of Rights. When I get done, I can change it so that it goes away. But all right, so let's move on to this book. The book that I'm referring to is Lindsay Gibson's book called "Recovering from Emotionally Immature Parents," but it really actually has to do with any emotionally immature relationship that we have. And most of us have somebody in our life who's a bit emotionally immature. There are three more rights to go. The right to equal importance and respect. That's right number 8. I have the right to be considered just as important as you. I have the right to live my life without ridicule from anyone. I have the right to be treated respectfully as an adult. And I have the right to refuse to feel shame. Wow, what do you guys think of that one? The right to equal importance and respect. That one, I know I still don't get that with my mom. She has these very odd distortions that's very, very painful. And you can't make people who are ill respect you, but you can limit the contact you have with them and limit the way in which they have influence over you. Does that make sense? So you can't say, stop being like that. Well, no, you can't make them stop being like that. But you can say, you know what? Because of that, I'm just not going to have a lot of contact with you. It's because it's very toxic not to have. So an example that just happened this weekend is my mom gave my sister a gift. And it was not a very expensive gift. And my mom said to my sister, now make sure when I pass away that you get that and that your sisters don't take that from you. As if I'm greedy. Why would I do that to my sister? I love my sister. And besides, I could go get that. If I wanted it, I could go buy that. So, but isn't that weird? I mean, there's complete lack of respect of me. Exactly. So yeah, it does. You're right. Ice cream with plastic, but we have to limit our contact. And it is really hard. It is really hard when this happens. It's very painful. In user 6453, it is sometimes we do have to walk away. Exactly. Yeah. So Melissa, you're moving 360 miles away to your home state and filing for wow, that's a big thing. That's a big thing. I'd love to talk about it more as soon as I get done with these bills of rights and So let me do number 9. And I want to make sure. Okay. So number 9 is I have the right to put my own health and well-being first. I have the right to thrive and not just survive. I have the right to take time for myself to do what I enjoy. I have the right to decide how much energy and attention I give to other people. I have the right to think things through. I have the right to take care of myself regardless of what others think. I have the right to take the time and space necessary to nourish my inner world. This is one that we often call self-care and self-love. So how well are you guys doing on this one? I find that I do pretty decently with this one. This one's not a hard one, but I know it's hard for a lot of us, and especially for women, because some of us grew up in cultures where we were put last. And for example, my mom and dad both worked, but when my dad came in, my mom would wait on my dad, even though my mom might have been exhausted and been on her feet all the day, and my dad hadn't. He'd been on a tractor, but yet my mom waited on him. So I know that there can be cultures in which that's really hard for. It sounds like this one's not a hard one for you guys. That's cool. I'm not seeing a lot of comments about it. So let's go to the last one. And the last one is the right to love and protect myself. I have the right to self-compassion when I make mistakes. I have the right to change my self-concept when it no longer fits. I have the right to love myself and treat myself nicely. I have the right to be free of self-criticism and to enjoy my individuality. I have the right to be me. Wow, don't you love that one? This one's an interesting one. So for example, I normally say don't talk about my appearance because I just, you know how it gets weird. People come on live and they see weird things. But I've made no secret. If you read my book, you know that I'm a bald woman. I don't have a lot of hair. And so I wear wigs. But one of the things that my mom used to say is that women who are older shouldn't have long hair. And because of my hair is thin. When I had hair, never had a lot of hair, but when I had more hair, it was always wispy and thin, and I couldn't, you know, do much cut with it. I certainly couldn't grow it long. So I just never tried long hair, but then I found out that I can wear long hair, and here I am. I'm turning 60 in June, and I know from my mother's like, hell no, a 60-year-old woman does not have long hair. And I'm thinking, why not? If I want to, I can. So that one's where I feel like, you know what? I'm going to embrace me and do me. So yeah, I'm kind of working on this one. And thank you. I love this hairstyle too. I think it's really, really cool. Kind of, I call it my Jennifer Aniston look. But so it sounds like you guys are doing well on this one. That's super cool. I appreciate that. I'm going to change this, make it big so that we can all see the comments. So how are you guys doing? What would you like to talk about? That was, by the way, for those who just joined, that was Lindsay Gibson's Bill of Rights in the back of her book called Recovering for Emotionally Immature Parents. And for those of you who don't know who I am, I'm Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy. I'm a clinician, mental health clinician. I have over 20 years of private practice experience. So we love to talk everything related to pathological relationships, difficult relationships. As you notice, I talk a lot about narcissism. And that's one of the reasons, because I was married for 31 years, and then I ended up, oh, you know what, Melody? I have a link of resources in my bio. It's called Mental Resources, but I will make sure that book's there. It's not there at the moment, but I'll make sure that book is there. But I wrote a book myself called Love You More, The Harrowing Tales of Lies, Sex Addiction, and Double Cross. And it's my own description. I was widowed in 2015. And then I leapt out, made a big mistake, and I ended up, getting into an extremely toxic relationship. And here I am, a psychologist. You'd think I would see all the red signs, but I'd not dated much before. I was grieving. I was new to the online dating scene. Things had changed a lot since when I got married in my early 1980s, you know? So like, ooh, yeah, it was. So that's what this book is about. And as a result, I talk a lot about narcissistic abuse. That was the lead up to this. I was talking a lot about narcissistic abuse. So ECT justice. Wow. ECT. I already can know what your suit was about. It was probably about ECT. Exactly. Right. You were getting justice around that. I hope that's, oh, sorry about this. This boy, I wish I could change it. I don't think I can get rid of this. Maybe I can. No, I don't see a way to get rid of this. I would if I could, but. Well, thank you, Melissa. That's a nice comment. And thank you for the guys for the gifts. I'm so touched when that is. So yeah, don't you find the online community really amazing? I really love it. I love that we can hang out together and talk about these things and talk about where we get stuck. A couple of you brought up issues that I didn't get into, but we can get back into them if you want to bring them back up again. You know, one of you made a mention about, that you're still in love with your narcissist and you don't know how to get over that. One of the things that happens when we're in a narcissistic relationship is that it's very addicting because of the way that they show up and really kind of give us lots of attention, and then they pull back, and then we feel like we met a person, and then they sort of change. So we end up thinking we've got to really work hard to get that person back. And then they become less, you know, things become a little more toxic, and there were more fights. And then you have this buildup, and then they just sort of are gone. They just sort of discard. And you don't even know really what happened. And yet the person you met, you still love and was an awesome person, and you want that person back. But here's the thing. So I'm a psychologist, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about the personality of a narcissist. A narcissist's interior world is very insecure. It's shaky. It's built actually on shame. The problem is they're so shaky, they can't even feel the feeling and be aware of it. So it's like super toxic to them. So what they do is they create this false shell of a person. Unfortunately, this false shell, which we all sort of have to create our identity on something, but for them, they're changing it based on who they're with, because the shame says, please like me. So what do we do if we're super insecure and we want someone to like us? What are we going to do? We're going to adopt the characteristics of the person we're around in order to get them to like us, right? In order for us to make the sale. So they're constantly adapting their personality in order to be likable by the person they're with. The problem is it's not really who they're, it's not authentic. It's not sustainable. And on top of it, it was all for a sale and to fix something that person, that relationship can't fix. They're asking you to fix this incredible deep wound that's impossible to fix. So as a result, they then begin to let go of it. The once they know that you're in, that something kind of like sets the relationship, but maybe it's marriage, maybe it's an engagement, maybe it's a baby, maybe it's something. It'll be something, bought a house together, moved in together, something will happen that will sort of seal the relationship. And when that happens, they start to let that false self they created for you slip. But those of us who meet these people, we don't know that. We think we met whoever we met. And as a result, we feel we like that person. That person was incredible. And here's the other part that's really sort of horrible and yet heartbreaking. They've mimicked you in order to get you to like them. They took on your characteristics. That's the mirroring some of you have been referring to. Exactly. They've been mirroring you. And so we essentially see an image of ourselves. And here's the thing. We like ourselves. We would like to meet ourselves. And so when we meet this person who's sort of presented as us, it's very intoxicating. Who could not fall in love with that? Seriously. Because, you know, you're a super cool person and you like being with you. And how cool to meet someone like you. So that's why you still feel this hangover of being in love, is because of the way in which the reward and the withdrawal was happening is a very addicting pattern. And because you met yourself, and that was an amazing thing to meet. And there's no one, you've probably never met anyone like that before. You've never probably met a reflection of yourself like that. So good is that before. Exactly. The twin flame theory. That's exactly right. So that's why you're still aching. It's because you're grieving. That helped me a lot because I had lost my first husband of 31 years and I knew grief. I really sat in grief and knew it. When my ex discarded me, I felt it again. In fact, I was looking at, you know, I was thinking of you, Colette. I was looking at some of the text messages that I was writing him after he discarded me, because he was trying to like maybe keep me on the line, sort of breadcrumb me a little bit. And so like, maybe we could be friends, he said. And I had been finding out all this awful stuff that wasn't real. And I was reading those texts and I was like, please help me understand what happened. Please. I was like begging him to like give me some answers. And it was painful. And that was helping me remember how that spot you're in, that was a really, really hard spot that hurt bad. But it helped when I was able to put words to it and say, you're grieving. That person never existed, but maybe it's better to think of them as that they died, that this person's gone and they're not coming back. He was never, or she never was that in the first place. As Spiritual Samurai said, it was a twin flame presentation. It was mirroring presentation. So it kind of, that may be a way to help you process this. So whenever I would feel it, like I still do, you know, it's been 3 years now and sometimes I still feel it, to be honest with you. I say to myself, yeah, but that person never existed. Sure, you, that was really great, but that's not who he is. You know who he is. I remind myself, you know who he is. And that's not a match. He's not a nice guy. He's an awful person. And that kind of helps me reset and get back on under my feet, back underneath of me. I hope that's helpful. But I feel for you. I really feel for you. Is the person who still was talking about losing the brother, that, are you still here? If you are, let's talk about that. Oh, thank you, Spiritual Samurai. I appreciate that. Yeah, but there's somebody that was on earlier that his brother had cut her off. Yes, there you are. Yes. So you're in the same position in a way, you know, the position of, you had this sense of this relationship and you thought you knew the rules of it, and then something happened and then it was like a devastating cutoff, a discard. And I know it wasn't romantic, but see, narcissistic abuse doesn't just happen in romantic relationships. It happens everywhere. It happens in families, and it can happen with siblings, and it can happen at work and all that kind of stuff. Oh, thank you guys. I appreciate that. So, yeah, you're doing the same thing. You're grieving, Wendy, as well. You're sort of like, you thought you knew who your brother was. You thought you had a certain kind of connection. And then this just, it must be devastating. This must be devastating. I'm really sorry about it. It's hard. You know, I had a similar thing, not as dramatic as you, but, my sister right now, one of my sisters is going through something really, really rough, and they've cut me off. They've cut me off. It's not even fair. I don't even get it. And what they're going through is horrible, and what I went through myself. And I know something about it, but they don't want help at any level, not at any level. So you're right. It just sort of like, it's a very, very painful thing. Very painful thing. Yeah, I'm glad that I was reading the comment of Joyful here about sharing about mirroring. Yeah, exactly. You know, if you think about it, so imagine for a moment that you had something so painful that was something maybe you really blew it. I mean, like, and you knew that you blew it. And it's so bad you can't face it, that you don't even want to talk about it. Okay, so take that feeling you're feeling about that and add like 1,000 times to it. That's what the center of a narcissist feels like. It's that bad. It's so bad they can't look at it or even know that it's there. And if you ask them, if you said, you know, you're having a big issue with shame and worthiness, you're very, actually a very insecure person, they'd say, I don't know what you're talking about. That's how defended they are from it. But yet, if you really look, you look at their behavior, this, look at me, look at, isn't I had somebody who said, hey, I bought these shoes. You need to go get a pair of shoes just like this. And I'm thinking, you're a grown ass adult. Who does that? I mean, sometimes some of their behavior is like, here's an example that my ex did. And I was like, really? My ex has got his identity stolen, and it's real. There's actually proof. Because you never know, because he's such a liar, I really didn't riddle. But there's actually proof. I found the person who has his identity. I know where this person's living. I found him on Facebook, believe it or not. Because I did a background check on my ex, and so this address showed up in the city in Texas. He's actually in Texas with me. So I found him on Facebook, the person who's using my ex's identity. Well, this person actually went to graduate school and has a master's. So they've done very well for themselves with his identity. And my ex said, you know what? I think I'm going to write to the school and get the transcripts and then say it's my MBA. After all, he's using my name and he's using my social security number. So isn't that my degree? And I said, you think you're going to pull off a master's in this area that you don't know anything about? Anybody who has that education is going to know you're fake. And he didn't get it. He's like, well, it's my name, right? Isn't it my name? I'm thinking, you don't get this. I mean, that'd be like, I mean, I have a PhD in psychology and I still feel like there's a whole lot about psychology I don't understand. But he actually thought he could pull off this master's. So that, do you see, and you look at that and you think, that's sad. I mean, but that's what they're doing. They're doing that everywhere around everything. They're that shaky that they put on this false persona that's completely manufactured because for them, so here's the thing. This is the paradox about psychology. The healthier you are, the more authentic you are, which means the more honest you are about your brokenness. You can face you can say, yeah, I really suck at that. I'm not doing very well. I had a bad day and I took it out on you and I shouldn't have. And I am so, see, it's not perfection. Healthiness isn't perfection. Healthiness is authenticity. It's transparency. It's being willing to be openly broken with other people. The more you're not able to do that, the more you've created these weird things that you're doing to protect yourself that then hurt other people. So if you think about everything that we do that's toxic and hurtful is all out of insecurity and self-protection. I don't want them to think that I'm not good enough, so I'm not going to admit that I'm really shaky today. In fact, I'm going to be so arrogant about this, I'm going to go in there and puff up, and anybody challenges me, I'm going to put them in their place. See, that's toxicity. It's all based on insecurity. So that's when you meet these super toxic people, you are meeting somebody who's really, really shaky, is a very shaky core, very shaky. And you're right. They do seem, and here you're bringing up a very good point. I love that, Colette. What you're seeing is raw emotion. They're very good at being emotionally raw. My ex cried. You guys, for those of you who've read my book know this, but he was a serial cheater, massively serial cheating. I didn't know it, I had no clue. So at the wedding, he actually spent the night with somebody else before he got married to me. He shows up after just being with somebody else, and then he cries saying his vows. And it was so moving. There were several men who didn't know him in the audience, and they jumped up to rush to go comfort him. And so it was a very authentic moment. Now, what was he doing that made him tearful? I don't know, but I can tell you it wasn't self-reflection, and it wasn't his regret over what he did to me. So I don't know. I don't know what he was crying about, but it felt authentic. So I agree with you. It does feel, but what they're doing, they're compartmentalizing, and that's actually a delusion. So what happens is they throw up these barriers in their mind. And so they only allow certain kind of like, no, he wasn't chopping onions. That's funny. They throw up these barriers. So they literally like partition themselves off. And that's how they able to like, now that I'm in this wedding with her, I'm with her. And I don't remember this me that I was a few hours ago didn't exist. I'm here in this moment. By the way, he passed 2 polygraph tests, and I know he wasn't truthful. I know it wasn't. How did he do that? Because he was compartmentalizing so well. So well that he literally didn't remember the other part. Exactly. So yeah, it is awful. It's very awful what they're able to do. How did I find out? Well, actually I found out because on the last night of the honeymoon, we took a delayed honeymoon. The other woman wrote to me. She'd been, and I know that the rest of the story, she wants to kind of make it out that she's a hero here for telling me. Yeah, that was a good thing. I appreciate her telling me, but it wasn't for heroic reasons. The reasons were because he'd been focusing on me and we were at a really nice resort he'd never been to before. And you know, they're all about enjoying the experience. So he wasn't responding to her texts and she was getting pissed. And so she got pissed and she decided to tell me that he and her had been dating for 3 months. So yeah, I know who this woman is and I know she's not a particularly nice person. And she may want to think she's a hero. She's not really a hero, but, she didn't do me any favors, let's put it that way. But at least she told me, and I appreciate that she told me. So, yeah, in fact, when the book came out, she said, oh, are you going to send me a copy? I'm thinking, why would I do that? Honey, you can. There's the link. You can buy, if you want to read the book, buy the book. Because I'm not mailing you a copy, sweetheart. So anyway, yeah, she was. She was sort of pick me girl. I think that was kind of the, you're right. You had the gist of it. This is me now just processing out loud with you guys. I think that she hoped by outing him, I would kick him out and then she could pick up with him. I think that's what she was hoping. What she didn't even already know was he was discarding her. It was just, it was already over, but it was already over with me too. And I didn't know that. That's the sad part was, He wasn't really in the marriage because he ever loved me. He never loved me. And if you guys notice my book, the last part of the word, double cross. Yeah, he was double crossing me. So yeah, he wasn't in it because he cared for me. Yeah, she was exactly. She was triangulating. So what, how else are you guys doing? What other kind of questions do you have about narcissistic abuse? Or do you guys know what triangulation is at Texas? Hey, where are you in Texas, Patty? I'm in Austin. I think we may have somebody else here from Texas too. But yeah, it is sad. It's sad the self-deception that goes on. It's just really amazing. Yeah, it was. The other person was being just as manipulative. Exactly. It was. Triangulation is, think of a stool, you know, a three-point stool. Oh, you're just southeast of Dallas. Oh, there's Kyle, Texas. I was just at Gainesville, Texas this weekend. I drove through Dallas area. Man, is traffic always bad between Austin and Texas or Dallas? It was horrible both directions. I mean, Kyle, you're not very far from me, Heather. You're pretty close. So triangulation is whenever we have a conflict between you and me. Let's pretend it's you and me. You and I have a conflict, but I don't know how to maybe get you to hear my viewpoint, or maybe I feel kind of weak or insecure, or maybe you're not talking to me. So what I do is I go tell somebody that knows both of us, and I hope that person will somehow go to you and get you to talk to them to then talk to me, or for that to sort of work it out, somehow kind of fix it between us. It doesn't always have to be between three people. It can be, or it can, we can also do it around concepts or ideas. I'm trying to think of what I mean, give you an example of what I mean. So we can triangulate in lots of different ways. So I'll say it again. It is whenever we have a conflict or conflicting values or opinions, and it's usually in a relationship, but not always. And we bring in a third party in order to fix it between the first two people or the first two issues. It's bringing in a third as a way to fix it. So say, for example, Susie and Patty aren't talking to each other, but they both are friends with Linda. So they go, so Patty goes to Linda and says, Susie's not talking to me. I don't know what the deal is. Do you know what the deal is? And then Linda says, no, I don't. And then Linda goes over to Susie and says, hey, I hear you're not talking to Patty. What's going on? See, that's triangulation. The way to solve it, it's never good. It never works out right. The way to solve it is, yeah, exactly, pull in the mediator. The way to solve it is you say to the person, if you're being the third person, what you say is, you know what? I think it's best that you two talk to each other. I don't mind being there if you want me to be there when you talk, but you two need to work this out. It's don't get involved. Yeah, it's never good. Don't get involved. But watch for thirds. Whenever there's a third incident coming in, it's always not good. Yeah. Can someone pick up narcissistic tendencies after being married? That's called narcissistic fleas. Shenanigans. That's what that's called. Yes, we can. We can pick it up. Partly we pick it up because we hope that by, Okay. And this is going to do something weird. I can't get rid of this. Sorry about that. So the way, what happens is that when we're around them long enough and we know how things work communication wise with them, we end up using those methods because we're trying to like break through it. And also we want to give them a taste of how painful it is. So we do it back hoping that maybe they kind of like get the point and stop doing it, but it doesn't work. Also, we just get tired and fed up and exhausted. So, you know, we do, I know that for example, mine would do gaslighting around apologies. He would say, I'm sorry you feel that way. Near the end of the relationship, I was saying it back to him. He'd get upset about something. I'd say, I'm sorry you feel that way. And I was saying it because, you know what? I just didn't care anymore. I didn't care that he had an issue. I was done. I was done being criticized. I was ready to discard him when he was getting ready to discard me, but I was married to a narcissistic sociopath. And I knew that if I discarded him, it would be bad. He would burn my life. So as a result, I waited for his discard. That's what I did. So I got a little not very pleasant. And so yes, that's very possible. That's what that's called. The thing is to recognize that so that when you're out of it, not to do it. You know, so now if I'm feeling tired or like those 10 Bill of Rights, if you were here for that, when I feel like I'm not protecting one of my rights, then I do a better job instead of acting out. Because when we do it, it's just a form of acting out. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm just trying to get all the things to go. Yeah, I appreciate that Perdilicious, you coming in and saying that, but we don't talk about religion, politics, or my looks here. So, if you want to stay here and talk with us, I would love that, but we won't have the religious conversations here. There are other lives that will do that, but this isn't one of those. Yeah, exactly. When we find ourselves, Wendy, I'm responding to you. When we find ourselves having to hold ourselves in, you're right. Even that, in a way, is a form of acting out. It's not narcissistic, but it is a form of acting out, and it's not helpful. So, yeah. I'm glad that explanation of triangulation helped. It's a common technique that happens in a lot of relationships. It's just not healthy when we do it, though. It's a sign that here's a good example. Kids do it to us all the time. Mom, he's picking on me. That's a great example. What are they doing? They're soliciting someone they think has more power in order to act on their behalf. I'm glad you found me here too. I'm glad you like the content. Yeah. We do this 3 times a week. We come and hang out and we talk about psychological matters. Yeah. It's a way to bolster power and, credibility. So it's a sign of insecurity. If you're feeling an urge to pull in a third person or a third something, it's because you're feeling shaky and feel like you don't have a lot of power in that situation. Oh, you appreciate that. Thank you. You guys are, you know, here's how I feel about it. I was a psychologist, a practicing psychologist for 20 plus years. And one of the things I always found is that I view people confiding in me as sacred, like precious. It's a privilege. You guys divulging any of this here is a privilege, very much so. Well, I'm glad that it's helpful. I'm really glad that that's the case. So Horsey, the Frenchie, I've been married for 20 years to this man and just now thinking he's a narcissist. I don't know. Yeah, you know, I'm having some of the ahas about my first marriage. I was married 31 years to him. And was he a full-blown narcissist? No, but he had some traits that weren't very kind. And definitely there was a little bit of narcissistic abuse going on in that relationship too, which is heartbreaking to feel that. It feels like to me, and I'd be curious if it feels that way to you, but the more you become aware of this, you start to see how prevalent it is and how many relationships in our lives it's occurring in. And it's very, very concerning. I knew my situation was off and being manipulated. Yeah. Mine, I knew that I was being burnt out. That's how I was feeling. I was feeling like my husband was selfish and that I was just wearing out. And, his view was, this is my first husband I'm talking about now. I call my ex an ex, and I call my husband that passed away my husband. But he felt because he worked full time, that he just should get to come home. But by the way, guys, I was working too. I was working and raising 3 kids, and also I was writing on the side. And so I was literally giving out everywhere. And I called him just before he found out he had cancer. I called him on the way home from work and I said, I can't do this. And he goes, well, I don't know what you want from me. And I said, I want you to do more. He goes, well, I can't do any more. I don't know what to tell you. He said, like, are you kidding? So I don't know what would have happened if he'd not passed away. I don't know what would happen because it was burning me out. Yeah, I was kind of where you guys are at. Yes, that's a great question. There are levels of narcissism. And we're all, by the way, I hate to break it to you, you're on the spectrum somewhere, all of us. Every single one of us is on the spectrum. Nobody gets away from this. We have levels of it. Now, are levels healthy enough to where we're not hurting people? I hope so. But people are somewhere on the continuum. So you can be lesser or more. And yes, Ivy, there are different types. There's 7 different types. I'm about ready to do, was almost a year ago, I went through all 7 types, but I'm about ready to do it again because I know more now than I did a year ago. And I think it's just time to review them. But, one of the big ones is we talk a lot about is covert narcissism. So, an overt narcissist is someone who says this is me. It's all about me. And they like overtly are grandiose and entitled. A covert narcissist is someone who says, I'm a victim, so make it all about me. They manipulate through their victimhood. Whereas an overt manipulate, just outright manipulate. So that's kind of the big differences between those two. But there are going to be varying types. And they're also, all of us are somewhere on the spectrum. So yeah, I don't demonize because you're pointing the fingers back at ourselves. You know, all of us can get narcissistically wounded. That's based upon insecurity. So no, I'm not saying everyone is a narcissist. I'm saying everyone has narcissistic traits. That's what I'm saying. So do you wish you were special? Do you sometimes, make sure you take a little extra care of yourself around something? That's a little narcissistic. Is it bad? I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that, you know, we all do that a little bit. So Yeah. For example, I'll tell one on myself. I cooked for the family. I did that for years and years and years. I usually would make sure I saved sort of the best piece for myself. Yeah. That was not very nice of me. That was a little narcissistic. Now I'm feeling blushing again. So yeah, I mean, I could see it sometimes. And so, you know, if you cut somebody off and you're really only thinking of your topic or your agenda, that's a little narcissistic. Now, I'm not saying you're a narcissist. No, absolutely not. But it is good to be aware of, I did the work, Sarah. They're funny. It's good to be aware of where we, you know, how we feel a little entitled or a little privileged or when we get a little jealous. Jealousy is a big envy. And envy is a big feeling of narcissists. They're very envious of other people. That's why they shit on us, because they want to squash and ruin what you have. Well, we all struggle with that sometimes, right? So that's all I'm saying. Same with borderline, by the way. I have not talked much about borderline personality disorders. I probably even know more about that than I do about narcissism. I know a lot about narcissism, but I know a lot about borderline personality disorders. One of my classes that I had in graduate school was by a professor who had written on the topic, and I had him for a whole course. And so I had a whole big course on the borderline personality dynamic. We're also all on the spectrum as well for that. Their big issues is engulfment and abandonment. And who of us is not afraid of being invisible or fail to exist? And who of us are fearing abandonment? We all do. So we all have those issues too. The big issue between them versus normal versus non-normal borderline issues is people who really struggle with that have emotional dysregulation. It means that they really have problems maintaining control of their emotions, that it sort of just overrides and everything is that emotion. I was just seeing somebody had written about Fatal Attraction, because Glenn Close plays the character she plays. I'm trying to think of the name of the woman in the movie. Alex Forrester in the movie is a borderline personality disorder. But you know the interesting point this person was making? You know who the real villain in that story? It isn't Alex. It's the Michael Douglas character. If you rewatch that movie, you're watching a classic narcissist move. He love bombs her. You know, he's married. He loves bombs her. He has a really great time. He becomes disillusioned when he finds out she's a lot of workplace. He's got his wife's coming home. And then he proceeds to discard her and devastates her. And she, you know, you're seeing her reaction, but her reaction is to narcissistic abuse. And how many of us can relate to how painful that is? Especially when we think we've fallen in love with somebody. So yeah, he is. He's a narcissist in that. But isn't it interesting how when that movie came out, we didn't talk about, I mean, I'm now really dating myself. We didn't talk about that, that there was not any kind of conversation. All the focus is on Glenn Close's characterization of Alex, when really the true villain in the story was the Michael Douglas character. It was just what we do everywhere, right? We victim blame everywhere. Yeah, and she was victim blamed as well. Granted, she does. I mean, that rabbit's, you know, she does way over the end, but exactly. I love that popcorn, guys. Your guys are funny. Yeah, she is crazy. Yeah, and that's the thing about borderline personality dynamics is that there is a portion of it that is delusional. But isn't the narcissist, the portion of the narcissist is just as delusional? You know, they create this fantasy world that they think you're going to somehow, you know, the script and you're going to show up perfectly. And then when it doesn't, you know, happen to go there. Oh, ice cream. You meant, yeah, you're right. And the focus on her is a reflection of the culture's focus on pathologizing, yeah, women for one. By the way, did you get, this is from a 1970s. This is fascinating. I actually went to school with a professor. His name was Paul Werner. So Paul Werner did this big study. It was talked about a lot in the time, at that time in the 1970s. What he did was he had a simple list of adjectives. It was just a sheet of paper with adjectives. And he said, check all the adjectives that describe a healthy man. Then he said, check all the adjectives that describe a mentally ill person. Then he said, check all the adjectives that apply to a woman. Guess what? The woman's adjectives nearly matched the mentally ill's adjectives. Isn't that awful? So are we surprised why women are kind of... Now, and here it is. We're talking now. It's been 50 years. But how... enlightened have we gotten from then? I don't know. Well, they're now starting to do lawn work behind me. It's going to get really loud, so I'm going to... But let me... Couple things, and I forgot totally to mention this, and I really meant to mention this. There's a live webinar coming up on April 6th at 7 p.m. You guys really don't want to miss this. If you guys are interested in this at all and you think this is good, that evening's going to be amazing. It really is. It's with Stronger Than Before with Lisa Sonos, or Sony, then also Kelly, Lovely Lady Love. It's also with Ben, who with Raw Motivations, and then Lee with Mental Healness. And they're amazing. And myself and Manjeet is also going to be there. So two licensed clinicians, two self-aware narcissists, and two coaches. So if you enjoy this, what we just been doing, it's also going to be live Q&A going on. And at the end, we'll have 30 minutes where you guys can actually direct questions to people. So please check out the link. It's $20 to go at 7 p.m. April 6th. And if you can't make it that night, then there's free replays for anybody who buys a ticket. I would love, love, love to see you guys there. I really would. Yeah, that would be awesome. So I hope you check it out. And also, I will be live again on Thursday at noon and Saturday at noon. So I can't wait to see you guys, and I will just come and hang out with you. So I don't know if you guys know that I have an Instagram account that I do kind of in a little bit. I'm a writer first. I don't know if you guys, I know I put this book out, but writing is a better way for me to express myself. And so I post twice a day over there. One is a reel, which is usually a TikTok I've shared here, but the other is a post, and I share thoughts about it. You know, so I get some kind of this really powerful quote, and I use a little bit of research, or I kind of tie into some observation I'm making. So it's the same handle, Carrie McAvoy, PhD. And the other thing I want to make sure to let you guys know you may not know about is I have a free newsletter of a year's worth of content. Free. No gimmick. Nothing. I will never charge you for it. I'm kind of putting it out, drip porting it out. I got 30 weeks already present. So if you join, if you want to sign up for it, the link's in my bio. Is called Surviving Narcissism. It's a progressive step on how to redevelop boundaries, how to even kind of conceptualize change, and how to make change with yourself. So if you're interested, please check the link in my bio for both the seminar and for the newsletter. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. I really, really appreciate it. Bye-bye.